Are we really doing this? You know how pissed Starkey gets when we talk about him on this show. Why are you baiting me and on a Friday trying to get me in trouble with him?
Got to get down on Friday, Pony. He's out of town. He's on a softball trip. He's not listening.
Really?
Yes. Travel softball, my friend.
Odyssey app. You can listen anywhere. Go download it.
He's probably like looking up golf swing tips right now on Instagram or something.
Craig Riley's going to have the North Shore Tavern leadoff show at 6 o'clock. Craig's in studio with us right now. Pirates trade deadline. Take everything into account going all the way back to the Frazier deal. Good grade, bad grade, decent job, awesome job. What do you think?
I mean, gut reaction on grading is like somewhere in a B range, I would think, right now. Because I'm still trying to figure out the guys that they just got. The Frazier trade was underwhelming at first, but there's things I like about it. The Clay Holmes trade was surprisingly good. They traded a guy like Austin Davis. Who in the world thought they were even going to be able to move him? So if they get somebody that does one thing...
He was on the team?
Yep.
I mean, if the guy they traded Austin Davis for does one thing at the major league level, it's more useful than Austin Davis is. So I don't mind trades like that at all. Take a chance. It's a guy Charrington obviously likes. So overall, I like what they did at the deadline. I think they got a lot of positions that they could use. They got some guys closer to the major league level, and that's not what they've been doing with their trades prior to this. But they also got guys at the lower level with higher potential. So it's a little bit everything.
I thought they got an interesting mix. I thought in the Clay Holmes deal, they got a guy in Park that is clearly blocked in the Yankees logjam of middle infielders. So it's always interesting to me. I used the Rincon for Giles deal. Pony wanted to kill me for even bringing it up, and so did Greg Brown, actually, but...
He wanted to kill you anyways, but...
Sure, the basic...
Because your political views.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, too far. Wow, forget it. But I like the idea of taking from a team that just doesn't have a spot for a guy because they already have established players. That's one way I like trying to get a player.
And the Yankees were desperate. Their bullpen was terrible.
Their fans seemed annoyed by that trade, which always is kind of like a base level thing I like. With Chavis, at least, you're trading a guy in Davis just now here that nobody even remembered was on the roster. Like, most fans could not have told you that. Hell, I couldn't have even. The only reason Pony remembered is because he saw him pitch against the Mets.
I've tried to forget him.
Recently. Chavis, at least, this is the other thing I like. Get somebody that is obviously a reclamation project at best and probably will never do anything meaningful. Probably 90% chance he doesn't. The 10% of Michael Chavis that could offer something to you offers what is in demand in baseball, and that is real, honest-to-God power. 18 jacks in 95 games his rookie year. That is something that at least gets me to perk up and go, huh, something went right enough for this guy that in barely half a season's work, he was on something like a 33 home run pace.
Do you think this comparison is fair for Chavis so Pirates fans can understand it? Like a position player version of Mitch Keller, a guy that was highly rated, did something at the majors to impress you at one time by hitting a bunch of home runs. Other numbers all stunk. Mitch Keller struck some guys out, had some good starts, had to be sent back to AAA.
Did Chavis have great minor league numbers, or was he just decent down there?
Just decent.
Okay.
But always thought of as better than what the numbers were, like Mitch Keller.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably a pretty accurate
And I don't love Mitch Keller, but it's at least something we can compare.
Well, that's the reason I think that's a pretty good comparison by you is it because it drives home and underscores the fact that this is most likely not going to be a guy that ever pans out. But you at least could understand why a general manager, especially the general manager who picked him, right, would want to see him back here and say, I can get my people around him. I can do something with him.
And what's Austin Davis in
his
best form?
So let's say Craig wanted to use the North Shore Tavern leadoff show as a springboard to becoming the next
Paul Zeiss.
Jim Rome.
Oh, okay.
And he was looking at doing the Pirates gig as a way of transforming his career and using that as the initial, you know, the initial opportunity that led him to bigger and better things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if Craig just does a solid job with that, he does a good job. Nobody complains about the job he does. The people here like him doing the pre- and post-game show, but it leads to nowhere. And he just keeps doing the pre- and post-game show.
Just does a safe, solid job.
Is that good enough?
No.
No. I would say not good enough.
Okay, so that's what I'll say about the Pirates trade deadline. I'm comparing what Ben Cherington has done here in the last week to Craig Riley's career aspirations. He's done a solid job, given what he was supposed to trade. But are the players back expected to get him anywhere?
Not especially.
You know what I mean? Like, he did a good, given the hand he was dealt Adam Frazier is a singles and doubles hitting second baseman who's almost 30 years old. Clay Holmes blows. Tyler Anderson is a fourth or fifth starter who is in the final year of his contract. Richard Rodriguez is a 31-year-old closer who was having a career year for 2 months and has come back down to earth. He got rid of all those guys, but he didn't really get anybody back who you would
say the most exciting player changes the fortunes of the franchise.
He just did his job.
The best player he got back was 21-year-old Adam Frazier with maybe a little more pop.
But do you know what I'm trying to say? There's no way you could look at these moves and think, you know what, the Pirates are closer to winning because of what Ben Cherington has done this week. Which is not to say he screwed the pooch and did a bad job. It's just to say that given
what commentary on what they had to trade.
That's what I mean.
And if they weren't going to trade Brian Reynolds and really tear this
team to studs.
And
everyone agreed that they needed to trade those guys and that he did the right thing. But what does that really get him in the end?
Here's the problem with your analogy. If we're going with my career trying to become Jim Rome, I'm not sending this trade deadline as my demo if I'm Ben Cherington. I'm sending the last offseason when I had real pieces to move.
Okay.
That's what I would grade him on more long-term because that's when he had pieces people really wanted. Nobody really wanted Adam Frazier this offseason or they would have moved him then because the value was higher at that point, they had to think, because they had a full year this year and next year.
Yep.
So I would grade him more on that than I would grade him on what he did here. Here, he traded Adam Frazier, which was a good player, and he traded essentially spare parts. Richard Rodriguez, over his last 18 innings, stinks. He's only ERA over five. He didn't trade anything good there.
Let's call it like it is. Richard Rodriguez is only in that role because the Pirates are a rebuilding team.
They didn't even name him their closer to start the year. They were like, okay, we'll do it by committee. And then he did a good job and he got the
job. He did a really good job for the first 2 months of the year. He deserved to be called a closer.
And then he stunk when the value they were probably hoping would continue to go up. And yet they still moved him for guys I kind of like, to be honest. So I give him a lot of credit for that.
I think trades are a really sticky, well, I hate using the sticky stuff in baseball now because everyone's like, well, pardon the pun, yeah, is it a pun? You know, what are your sticky situation? Are you talking about spider tech? Like, I hate.
Are you suggesting that you would like to go in another?
Why are you doing the Starkey thing again?
I'm trying to get you in trouble.
I'm on that show more now than I was before. That's what he's going to say.
They should name it Starkey Pony and Mahler.
Yeah, he's going to make a big deal of it when he comes back in on Monday when he's by himself and Cook's not here to
put
him in his
talk,
place on it.
Speaking of Cook, you want to talk about a guy who had a case of pre-vacation elation.
Whew.
He was...
I almost thought you said another word that started with E there.
No, elation.
Okay.
At about 1:53, you saw a slow smile spread over his lips while he was talking, and you could just tell that man was ready to... he was ready.
The thought of trades for Pirates fans, it's a dirty word. Because it usually means we get guys, and even if they're good, we have to trade them. Like, we're always on the losing end of trades, because even when we get good players back, it's this vicious cycle of when they get good, we have to trade them because we won't pay them. And that is the thought that is in the minds of many Pirates fans when they go through days like this, whether that's right or wrong. Like, I was talking to you before the show about this, Chris. You weren't here for it, Craig. I said, take tonight, for example, or instance at PNC Park. Andrew McCutchen is coming back, beloved by Pirates fans, the face of a team that ended their 20 years of losing, was an MVP, and went to the playoffs for three straight years, and really embraced everything that is being a high-profile athlete in Pittsburgh, okay? I bet if you polled baseball fans here and said, would you rather have Andrew McCutchen at 34 years old on a long-term deal that keeps him here until his 40s, but it proved that the owner was willing to pay to keep a star, or Brian Reynolds, a much better player in his 20s with huge upside. I think a lot of Pirates fans would say, I still want McCutchen.
And that's why you don't let fans run a team, because that's dumb. Yes, it
no, it's, but I don't think it's dumb, Chris. I don't think that that's completely lunatic level.
Oh, now you're getting us all in trouble.
What are you doing here? Is this revenge for the Starkey thing? You're just trying to goad me into some sort of anti-Deion screed? You don't even have to goad me for that. I think it has a certain value with people who want to believe that things can be different financially. I do. Ultimately, the right move was to trade him and get Brian Reynolds.
Brian Reynolds is their best player. He's even better than Brian Hayes.
This is just a variant. Yeah, right now it is. This is just a variation on the take I used to do with Starkey, which was... the Pirates, there are people in our listening audience, this is a couple years ago, who would rather the Pirates have a $200 million man in Andrew McCutchen
and suck.
Yeah, they'd rather them spend the money in a dumb way.
I would use Votto as the example. They'd rather have a guy who's producing numbers and getting a huge contract on a bad team just because it's a small market that paid big money than they would have the Pirates try to be nimble. What sucks about baseball, and what I guess I want to be clear is the fact that fans in a city like Pittsburgh or a city like Cincinnati have to have that choice, have to be in the position to say, what of these two scenarios would I rather have, because it's so unlikely that they'll ever have their cake and eat it too.
I know he's on our station and everybody loves him, but wouldn't fans have wanted them to sign Neil Walker to a long-term deal as opposed to trading him?
Would that have
been the right move?
No.
I mean, they made a terrible trade, but trading him was the right move. So you can say people want
because
them
because the guy that replaced him, Josh Harrison, was better than Neil Walker at that point in their careers.
But so, the guy he was traded for, John Neese.
I could have told you that. I don't know why Huntington didn't.
You did say that when they made the trade.
Yeah, and apparently he listens to the media, and you know we're the ones that forced him to make the Chris Archer trade, so I don't know why he didn't take my word.
You know what? He listened to you on the Archer trade because he didn't listen to you on the Walker trade.
That's
his lesson.
I mean, people want them to spend money, but if you spend it foolishly, they're going to pay for it. That's the big problem. And like you said, it's operating.
The problem is that you have to make that distinction in baseball and decide which of these two hypotheticals would you rather have.
But if we're going to talk about the Pirates, you have to talk about it in a way with an understanding that this is how it works. Like, I got to talk about that 81 times a year. I can't sit here in 81 games a year, say they should just spend this money when I know it's not going to happen. So when you talk about them, you have to say, this is the parameters they have to work under, and this is how it has to work.
But how do you reconcile a 24-hour window like this where the Dodgers just picked up Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, and now their payroll is five times that of the Pirates? How can you say, I know the World Series was the smallest payroll or the second smallest payroll in baseball against the Dodgers last year, so maybe that gives you slim hope, but... You know, I guess the best I can say about this is if anyone can do it, if anyone can turn Ben Cherington into can turn the Pirates into the National League version of the Rays, it's Ben Cherington. Is that the right thing to say here about their plight?
Okay. If you were in Johnny Pirates fan's shoes, what else would you say?
Well, you'd complain about not having a salary cap.
No, forget it. But if, like Craig says,
we can do that till we're blue in the face.
Realistically speaking, we know that there is not a financial revolution coming to the sport, even though there probably is a work stoppage coming to the sport.
All right, Dan Zangrilli, go on.
Wait.
Zangrilli basically has it in his contract where I think on every postgame show he mentions that like there's going to be
imminent looming work stoppage.
Yes.
I just thought you said I was doing an affect like
no,
Zangrilli.
No, Craig will
there.
Back me up on that. He's huge on that next work stoppage every time I hear him.
Anyway, though, knowing that a financial revolution isn't coming, all you can say is, I hope Ben Cherington gets it right. I hope he can be the guy to do this. There's no other life preserver coming.
I know.
Do you like what you've seen from him so far?
I think he has put together a very good draft where all you can gauge it on is, did he execute his strategy and throw around the extra money they had relative to every other team correctly?
I would argue that yes.
I would argue that unequivocally yes, because they got pretty much all those guys. And then with the trades, I just default back to what Andrew said here. You'd love to have seen him get somebody's like second best prospect. Drew Waters, I think, is the Braves' second best guy in that Reynolds deal that Jim Bowden pitched like about a month ago. But he didn't have that chip. So basically, if this were a poker game, you would be asking Ben Cherington in a perfect world to have bluffed his way to an embarrassment of riches, and it just doesn't work that way.
Those were the trades he made in the offseason. Joe Musgrove got one of the Padres' top prospects.
Those left me so far like a little bit underwhelmed.
But that's what we have to wait and see. Part one of what Ben Cherington is doing is tearing it all down.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, he's acquired the type of players. He's taken their farm system from middle of the league
to top of the league.
Now the next step is develop.
Do you know what he has to do? Yeah, I was going to say, he has to separate himself and differentiate himself from Neil Huntington in one crucial way. Now that he's supposedly acquired all this talent to boost the farm system, they have to, and I mean have to, develop it, because Neil Huntington never built a house that could stand on its own. He had all these drafts. Everyone got excited. Oh, Zach Von Rosenberg this in 2009, and it never panned out. They were a team that had stuff left over in the cupboard from David Littlefield's regime that ended up being the cornerstone pieces. And then Huntington, to his credit, some shrewd trades, a shrewd free agent signing of Russell Martin, and a bunch of rehab projects in pitchers got them where they needed to be for 3 years, mm-hmm. but there was never a long-term foundation there.
I think the Adam Frazier trade, as the days have gone by since, I think it looks better than it did at first blush. Because if you look at the other position players that have gotten moved here this week, Joey Gallo to the Yankees, Marte to the A's, Rizzo to the Yankees, Bryant to the Giants, Baez to the Mets. You know, most of them are lame duck guys. Gallo has another year left on his contract. But I would say for the most part, in all of those trades, now I haven't combed through all the ones that got made in the last 2 hours because we've been on the air, but from everything I've seen reported on about those deals, no huge prospect got moved.
Teams are very loath to part
with them.
I
think the Blue Jays gave up either their first or second. I think in the Turner deal with Scherzer stapled onto him, the Dodgers gave up their top two prospects in that trade. But that's a former Cy Young Award winner and an all-star shortstop with another year left on his contract. I can't put Adam Frazier in the same boat as those guys.
And the Dodgers have the kind of money to just, you know, Gallo, hey, Max, we're going to keep you here, too.
Gallo is the modern baseball player where he hits dingers like crazy and walks all the time and does nothing more than that. Actually plays good defense. And the best the Rays, they got quantity back. But the best they got back in that deal was New York's seventh-ranked prospect.
Well, that's a bad sign for baseball, too, because all these teams that are trying to acquire talent like that, these big markets, are loath to part with their prospects, too. Like, you should have it be so that the big market teams, in
theory— They will for pitchers, but all he had was Tyler Anderson and Richard Rodriguez. Chris, those guys aren't that good.
I'm just saying, like, there's way too much prospect hoarding from teams. If this is going to be anything resembling a perpetually healthy ecosystem with the same financial footing that it's got— then the big market teams have to be cycling through giving up their best prospects, too. I'm not saying, like, you just, here, just give them to us to be nice. But if they're going to spend all the money, you've got to have the talent flow going the other way in some way, shape, or form.
Which goes back to what we were saying. Are you happy with what Ben Cherington has done? It's why he acquired the prospects in the draft the way that he did. He has no more chips to trade. What is he going to move if he's not going to move Brian Reynolds, right?
No, you wouldn't think so.
Okay, so what else does he have left to trade from here on out to get prospects into this system?
Now he's supposed to be building.
So that's the thing. Bryce Wilson is going to start this weekend already. The guy that came over in the Richard Rodriguez trade.
Yeah, his people need to fix Bryce Wilson because he can't throw the ball over the
plate. So they're getting some guys at the top. They got guys at the bottom. They've traded everything they can trade. Everybody else that's here is pretty much going to be here, and now we see where he goes. Step one worked.
You know what else is interesting about how this trade deadline went down in terms of the two best players, Rodriguez and Frazier, that they traded? In both deals, the best player that they got back is Major League ready. How about that? I wouldn't have anticipated that based on the moves he made this offseason.
It's weird to me
he
that
he got a Major League pitcher, and he got a guy who's at AAA in the Frazier deal who started the big leagues with the Padres.
This is in the minority, this opinion. I don't think Marcano's Major League ready. They rushed him up there after a year off of baseball, basically, from low A to the majors. He should be making sure he's fine-tuned in the minors before they throw him right back into the same cauldron that apparently soured them on
him. But, Chris, if you looked at what they did with the Marte trade and with those deals, it was high upside guys that are years away from playing in the major leagues. In the last month, they took the best college hitter, and in the two trades they had to make, got guys back who they think will play on their big league roster this year. I think Marcano will be up at least in September, don't you? That would surprise me if he isn't. I'd be disappointed. Why would you give Kevin Newman at-bats over somebody like him?
I think him and Park could be here, the guy they got from the Yankees.
I would rather – well, yes. Okay, when you frame it like that, definitely in Park's case, he's 25. It's put up or shut up time already. The last thing I want to see for the rest of this season, or frankly ever again, is Kevin Newman hitting full-swing dribblers down the line.
Worst offensive shortstop in the league by the numbers.
Oh, my God.
It's not even close.
Man, if you ever want to feel superior to Keith Law for even 1 minute, just go back to Keith Law thinking that was the best hit tool guy in the entire draft when he came out.
Craig will have the North Shore Tavern leadoff show at 6 o'clock. Ben Cherington with us next. You could text to the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line right now. Edgar Snyder reminds you to text responsibly. It's the PM team. Cherington, Pirates GM. Talking to Jeff Hathorn, our insider at 93.7thefan.com and others about the deals that got made today and all of the flurry of moves surrounding the Pirates over the days leading up to the trade deadline. Here is the Pirates GM on what they got back for their closer today.
Been talking to teams about Richie for a while. Obviously, you know, first of all, he's done a great job for the Pirates. Really appreciate everything he did for us on the field and getting to know Richie over the last couple of years. And so It was a lot of teams that expressed interest. We worked on it quite a bit here over the last few days. Ultimately, really excited to welcome Bryce Wilson into the organization, who is a starting pitcher who has already had some success at the major league level, pitched in the postseason. He's young. We feel like he can come in and be part of a group of young starting pitchers. We're growing and developing, and come in and be a strong part of that. So look forward to getting to know him. Should be in Pittsburgh tomorrow, and expect him, you know, barring something unforeseen with travel, to be active tomorrow. And then we'll figure out sort of where it goes from there. We certainly want him to be making starts. And over the course of the weekend, we'll take some time to kind of reset with our staff and figure out what makes sense, both with the Indy roster and Pittsburgh roster. But really excited to welcome Bryce into the organization. And then in Ricky DeVito, a younger pitcher who has really good stuff, has a starter's repertoire, have some history with back to college at Seton Hall, was off to a really strong start this year and someone we were scouting. He's currently on the IL with some elbow, an elbow injury. And so we're aware of that, and we'll work with him to continue his rehab from that. So two guys, obviously at different points in their career, but two guys we think have a chance to be starting pitchers in the major leagues for us.
What is this young nucleus of starting pitchers that Charrington is talking about?
Like in Greensboro, I guess.
All the guys that are down at single A? This dude's 23 years old.
I guess he gets to be the elder statesman.
So he gets lumped in with that group and not...
You know, it's weird. I always talk about
how... The guys
that
are just here to eat innings and be part of the...
I always talk about
how age
in baseball is weird now because 30 is over the hill, and like just teams view age, you know, the age of a player differently than they did in basically, for lack of a better term, the PED era. But if you're the Pirates and you know that in almost every case these guys are going to be here for a handful of years and then the strategy is going to be to flip them, I feel like the age of the player and how you view them relative to your own team's future shouldn't really matter that much, right? If you think a 23-year-old guy is worth being lumped in with your younger pitchers, so what? It's not like you're trying to get on a timeline here where you would like them to show what they can do at a certain point in time, so then you're going to give them a long-term deal. You're going to try to keep like the cycle moving here.
Gerrit Cole was the number one overall pick, and at some points in his Pirates career, like 2013, when he got called up in 15 for most of the year, pitched like that. Not the guy that he's been with the Astros and Yankees, but was really good. But they picked him 1-1, one overall. The other guys that shaped really good teams here as starting pitchers were players that they went out and acquired who were veterans. A.J. Burnett had won a World Series, not pitched in a postseason. He had won a World Series with the Yankees. Francisco Liriano was with the Twins, who were a small market team that were competitive in playoffs. They didn't win any series, but were good. So what I'm saying is, like, the Pirates, have been a long time since the Pirates developed young pitchers, and that's who they, like, on their backs, they went out and they transformed themselves into a really good baseball team because they had a plethora, a portfolio of really good young pitchers. And I don't even know how they, do they have that now? I mean, how many pitchers in their organization are looked at? Like, if they had drafted Jack Leiter, he would have...
Hold on. How could you look at any of the guys currently in the organization like that when you've seen what's happened recently with the can't-miss guys?
Glasnow.
Keller so far. JT Brubaker, remember when Keller was struggling, even people like me were pivoting to, you know, JT Brubaker's approach looks pretty advanced. He looks like he might have what it takes. He's fallen off. How do you even... And this is... I'm sure, like, you could say this is being unfair, because it's a new regime and they've got to have their chance.
You're being unfair.
Great. But why would I, a guy who's watched this for how many years and watched almost every pitcher except for Cole, in-house guys, young guys, either falter here and thrive elsewhere or falter here and just continue to spin their wheels, why would I buy it until I saw it, see it until I believe it from any of these younger players? I can read about how so-and-so in high A for Greensboro might look really good. Yohure is going to be a good pitcher someday, right? And maybe they will be. But until I see it at this point, the burden of proof is squarely on the organization.
So then Mackey piped in on this conference call and said, well, who the hell are these young pitchers that you're talking about, Ben?
I don't think anybody that you wouldn't already know. You know, it's the guys at the major league level now. Guys at Indy, obviously a couple guys like Yahuri coming back with the elbow, Contreras coming back with the elbow. So we're trying to continue to build as much young starting pitching depth as we can. And then, of course, the key is to pour into development with them, continue to help them take steps forward. And that's exciting. You know, that's an exciting challenge for us. But we feel like over time and over the course of the past couple of years, and you know, we'll obviously continue to focus that on that going into the off season. But we just want to accumulate and build as much young starting pitching depth as we can.
Yeah, that's always been his stock answer on things, as much as we can.
But wasn't that Neil Huntington's? And I'm not trying to compare the two, but that's boilerplate stuff for a GM who's trying to rebuild a team in a small market.
Yep.
What you said, we don't really care about starting pitching. We want a team full of Joey Gallos.
Chris, the point I'm trying to make here is they do not have a pitcher from the very top on down that you look at and think, all right, this guy
can't miss.
Yeah. Priester. Oh, what is he?
The guy who would have been close to that if he would have followed on the same development curve that he's on right now is Shane Bass. 15th best prospect
for reminding me
in all of baseball.
That, Malzie.
What do you want Seriously. I remember hearing a bunch of good stuff about Quinn Priester not that too long
ago. Is it Baz or Boz?
You've said both. I've said both.
What made you pick Baz there?
I trusted your expertise. I think that's what you've gone with more often than
not. All right, here's more from Charrington.
We've acquired, I think, 11 players through these trades. Obviously, all at different points in their development, at different points in their careers. Several of them we feel are either, you know, knocking on the door of the major leagues to help us or relatively close. And there's obviously a handful that are a little bit further away. It's a nice mix of pitching and position players and at different positions. In every case, we think that there are clear ways forward from a development standpoint. Did a ton of work. Our pro evaluation group did a ton of work on the guys that are coming in terms of character and work ethic.
Okay. Character and work ethic. Scouting.
Again.
How would you even do that, by the way? You know, when you're a scout and you're sitting in the stands eating peanuts with a radar gun, how are you getting, I guess you're calling their coaches to get.
Yeah, I think that's like background information. Talk to people.
Other scouts.
Them, or you probably talk to people that know them. What kind of guy are they? Give me the real scoop here. Yes, I'm scouting this person, but I mean, what are they really like? Do they bust their ass when nobody's watching and so on? I wonder, though, what's the point where a guy has a great work ethic and then the milk eventually curdles and he goes, oh, he's just such an insufferable tryhard. Like, God, he's such a David Eckstein, and I don't mean that in a nice way.
Who's the biggest try hard, and it was obnoxious that he tried hard like that player the Pirates have had?
Oh, I was going to say in baseball history, it's Pete Rose, who somebody should have put a forearm shiver and knocked all his
running down to
out.
First base after walks.
If somebody had punched Pete Rose square in the mouth in the middle of a game, I would have put that person in the Hall of Fame while they were still playing. The biggest fake hustle try hard the Pirates have had in recent years?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head who comes to mind in that respect. I mean, Harrison was a big hustle guy.
Yeah, but
his seemed genuine.
Yeah, his seemed genuine, and there's a huge difference. You can tell when a guy's doing it just to look like he's trying and when a guy actually just is busting his ass all the time. Pete Rose, as I always felt, was fake. Who's the guy who runs down to first base after he gets walked? I think it's on the Mets, right?
Brandon Nimmo.
Oh, God, is that insufferable.
And then he points up to the sky.
Wonderful. Yeah. Craig, I can't think of one. All the Pirates and hustle stories I've thought about, McCutchen gets benched for not running out of pop-up. I want to say that Walker and Huntington had beef because of something like that in the minors. Ronnie Polino was one of the most, you know, casual players of the game I've ever seen, such that I think he was termed Jogging Ronnie by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a single guy they've had where I just said, oh, geez, is this insufferable fake hustle?
So to put a bow on this Pirates trade deadline conversation.
Yes.
Because I honestly, now that this has come and gone with Steelers in training camp, I'm not sure when we're really going to sink our teeth into the Pirates again. Because they're just going to play out the string and lose between 90 and 100 games. And that'll be the end of it for the next 2 months.
Correct.
You know what I mean? I would just say that the excitement I had for their draft picks and what they did with the draft probably made me feel like the trade deadline itself and the trade moves were anticlimactic. You know what I mean? Like, the order of things, I feel like they actually pushed their franchise
further ahead
with the draft. And there just was a little nudge with the trade deadline.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that completely. I think that's a very insightful and incisive opinion. I think if they have
See, now you're just trying to get your fines taken back here. You're trying to...
Why? I just called an opinion incisive, and my main fines are for when I use big words that nobody likes hearing.
True. That is a fine.
I think
you just tattled on yourself.
Correct. Well, I self-report. I hustle. Whenever... If they have the trade deadline somehow after the... Or before the draft, and the draft comes up next week, and they pull off the exact same draft heist... You and I think, are going like, damn, great job by Ben Cherington. The trade deadline was a little bit tough for him. He didn't have a ton to work with, but he did have the most money to work with in baseball in the draft, and he killed it. I think there's, I think it helps. It would be helpful to remember that just because one happened after the other, or in this case, the best thing he did happened a couple weeks ago, doesn't mean
you
downplay
it. And I think he left two little lines in the water for big fish. The Clay Holmes trade, if this Park kid...
ends up being a guy who's truly blocked. If my little Giles pie in the sky dream.
And Chavis. He's got two moves there where.
I actually think Marcano, it's not like a line in the water because he's the highest.
Yeah, but
profile.
You actually gave up something for him.
Oh, you're talking about like low risk and what you gave up, high
reward?
Yeah,
like he made two trades that might end up being nothing.
To me,
but if
Park
either
is
one
that.
Of those guys are good, it's like, holy crap, Ben Cherington fleeced the Yankees and Red Sox.
Chavis feels like a long way off from that, even though he actually has something of a major league track record. Park is the guy that I feel much more strongly about, you know, towards in that regard.
Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan, driven by Jim Shorkey, Kia, Wexford, North Huntington, and Uniontown. All right, we've got a year's worth of car washes to give away right now. From my good friends at Wet Go Car Wash. An entire calendar year worth of free car washes. Here's how, because this is our Come Clean and In Great Detail segment, Chris. Here's how you win. I talked about getting a tattoo this week. Come clean and in great detail about your worst tattoo. Where is it? What is it? Is
What's
it a tribal tattoo?
Isn't tattoo
Is it an ex-girlfriend or ex-wife's name?
Don't you have to get those like erased?
Is it one
covered?
Of those like Steelers Super Bowl champion 2016 because you thought they were going to go all
Is
the
it
way
a tramp
and then they
stamp?
Lost? Can you say that on the radio? You're fined.
Yes, you can say that. Why wouldn't you be able to say that? Lady in the Tramp, stamp it.
If I called your wife a tramp on the air, you would not want me to dump that?
You just did, didn't you?
No, I...
Oh, you said hypothetically.
Yes.
Why would you call my wife a tramp?
412-928-9370. Worst tattoo. Come clean and in great detail. The absolute worst one is going to win a year's worth of car washes from Wetgo. It's the PM team.